You know, it's one of the bigger operations that we've run with all of our federal partners. So, you know, we're doing this type of stuff every day, but just not to this level.
A large-scale Anchorage police operation rounds up dozens of suspects. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 22nd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a bear that killed one man and mauled another near Eagle River has not been found.
This is a public safety concern. We're going to have to probably go ahead and move on it. We just can't take the chance that we're letting a dangerous bear go.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside Alaska. And it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 1-800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
Dozens of alleged criminals were swept up this week in what Anchorage police are calling Operation Midnight Sun. Police say uniformed and undercover officers worked with state and federal law enforcement agencies over the course of several days during the coordinated street-level crime suppression operation. Police say the operation resulted in the seizure of nearly 20 guns, a little less than a pound of drugs, and five stolen vehicles. It also led to a total of about 60 felony charges or arrests for outstanding warrants, including the arrest of one man on a murder charge. Anchorage Police Lieutenant Jack Carson says Operation Midnight Sun went beyond the department's day-to-day police work to do something more proactive.
Crime suppression is actually going out and targeting criminal activity before they can victimize somebody. So we're taking it to them prior to that. So we're actually going out there and in seeking them out and arresting them.
Anchorage Police say the operation brought together the FBI, ATF, DEA, and others. It also included an Alaska State Trooper helicopter helping spot and track suspects from the air. Carson says that required a highly coordinated effort.
You know, it's one of the bigger operations that we've run with all of our federal partners. So, you know, we're doing this type of stuff every day, but just not to this level.
Anchorage police say the operation was possible because the department has increased the number of officers on the force and noted that Anchorage residents can expect similar coordinated efforts in the future. Alaska is one step closer to getting an in-state natural gas pipeline, though it's not clear if the project will ever be built. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced Friday that it would finish its environmental permitting for the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project sometime in the next 3 months. But the in-state pipeline project has taken a back seat to the massive Alaska LNG export project. Both projects would pipe gas several hundred miles from the North Slope to market, but the standalone pipeline is designed for in-state use. The Alaska LNG project is designed to sell that gas to Asian markets. Frank Richards is the senior vice president for both projects at the state's Gasline Corporation. He says the state corporation is focused on building the larger project. That means the in-state pipeline project is basically on hold now that it has the permits it needs.
So it's truly the backup plan. It means that we will have the permits and authorizations to construct should the need arise.
Even though the in-state pipeline project is on hold, Richards says it can still help develop the Alaska LNG project. The pipeline projects are similar enough that federal regulators could use work done on one to guide permitting for the other. Also, Richards says there's about $11 million left over from developing the in-state project that can now be used to fund the export project. A brown bear that fatally mauled a hiker in Eagle River this week and later attacked and injured another man is still on the loose. That's according to the Department of Fish and Game, which says an autopsy confirmed that 44-year-old Michael Soltis died as a result of the bear attack. Police say Soltis was last seen Monday night and was on a hike near his home on Highland Road when the bear attacked. The bear, or possibly a different bear, appeared to be guarding Soltis' remains when it attacked another man Wednesday who was part of a group searching for Soltis. The second victim was expected to survive. The bear's fate, however, is uncertain. Fish and Game spokesperson Ken Marsh says the department has personnel in the area still looking for the bear, as well as game cameras and traps placed on nearby private property. Marsh says they'll likely have to kill the bear.
This is a public safety concern. If we're fortunate enough to get a bear coming back to that site, we're going to have to probably go ahead and move on it. We just can't take the chance that we're letting a dangerous bear go.
People are still being warned to avoid the area, but Marsh says hikers can encounter bears in just about any part of Alaska. He says preventing negative bear interactions is always important, and traveling in groups and making noise while hiking can help. And Fish and Game recommends carrying some kind of deterrent, whether bear spray or a firearm. Marsh says there was no evidence either man attacked this week was carrying either bear spray or a gun. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, 60 years after a fatal crash, a team recovers remains and heirlooms on a glacier.
You kind of look down, you're like, oh, that's kind of stands out. Pick it up, look at it. Turned out it was a wedding ring. And it was kind of a pretty amazing find.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
Katmai National Park and explore.org fired up their popular bear cam this week. All around the world, thousands of people on laptops and tablets are again thrilling at the sight of brown bears fishing at Brooks Falls. Even U.S. senators got in on the joy this week, and as Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports, that's not the only Alaska delight the senators sampled from afar.
It's been a heavy week in Congress, and the Senate isn't known as a fun-loving place on a normal day.
Previous order, the Senate will resume consideration of H.R. 5895.
But let me tell you about something you won't see on C-SPAN. Almost every Thursday, Republican senators meet behind closed doors just outside the chamber for a theme lunch. Whichever senator is hosting brings food and treats from his or her own state. It's been going on since the 1970s. This week, it was Senator Dan Sullivan's turn, and he teased to it from the Senate floor.
You can almost smell the aroma. Right now we're baking it in the kitchen here. Salmon, halibut, reindeer sausage.
And there was more. Caesar salad from Alaska-grown kale. Potato salad from Alaska spuds. And rhubarb. Some of the veggies came from Myers Farm in Bethel.
Arguably it's a giant brag session amongst our colleagues.
Sullivan spokesman Matt Shuckero says the Thursday lunches are an opportunity for camaraderie, policy discussions, and a chance for the host senator to highlight issues of importance to his state. The big hit, though, at the Sullivan lunch, it was the two large screens showing live Katmai bear cam. Sullivan says the senators could hardly focus on anything else.
You can have the leader of the U.S. Senate up talking, and you have all the senators looking, and they're not looking at Mitch. They're like looking at the bears.
The bear cam.
It's great. It's hilarious.
Senator Lisa Murkowski agrees nothing could compete with video feed of bears lunging for salmon.
All of this important stuff is being talked about, and no one is listening because, there, he got it, he got it.
Party favors are customary at these lunches. Sullivan gave out goodie bags that included salmon jerky and a can of Alaska-brewed beer. The hosts aren't allowed to spend government money on the lunch. Shuckero says Sullivan used campaign funds. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Passengers on the ferry Tustamina saw the vessel collide with a whale Wednesday morning. That's according to Julie Spiegel, a spokesperson for NOAA. Fisheries Alaska Region. NOAA received a report of the incident from the Alaska Marine Highway System. The ferry was on its way to Kodiak when eyewitnesses saw a whale of an unknown species breach into the side of the ferry, says Spiegel.
Afterwards, the whale was seen swimming abnormally, and then it sank out of sight. From the force of the breach, it is likely that this whale suffered mortal injuries.
She says it struck the ferry's starboard stabilizing fin. DOT Public Information Officer Aura Landau says the ferry schedule will not be affected. The Centers for Disease Control is reporting an outbreak of norovirus on a Holland America cruise ship in Alaska. Some 73 people reported falling ill on the Zaandam, which is carrying more than 2,000 passengers and crew. Juno's top attraction is the Mendenhall Glacier. The glacier's visitor center can receive as many as 6,000 cruise ship visitors in a single day. The U.S. Forest Service monitors reports of outbreaks on cruise ships so it can step up sanitation as a precaution, said Visitor Center Director John Neary.
We take it really serious. Hand washing is just super important for our health, or else we're not going to survive the season well with a lot of losses of staff time. So it's a pretty important issue.
Holland America confirmed Friday that a number of passengers had reported falling ill on Monday. It said it activated a protocol to isolate ill passengers in their cabins and clean commonly touched surfaces to prevent the virus from spreading. The safety and well-being of our guests and crew is our top priority, the company said, adding that the Zaandam's schedule would not be affected. It's scheduled to depart Juneau at 10 p.m. and is headed to a number of Alaska ports, including Hoonah, Anchorage, Homer, Kodiak, and Sitka, before it returns to Seattle on July 2nd. For many residents of the Kuskokwim River, June is the most important month for subsistence salmon fishing. But in a small community, death can put a hold on that essential practice. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports a series of recent deaths in Kasiglik means that many families have barely begun putting away fish for the season.
Along the Kuskokwim River, Saturday was a day to drift nets, harvest salmon, and cut fish. It was only the second opening this season for subsistence users to target salmon with gill nets, a brief window in another year of tight fishing restrictions. But outside Kasiglik, a town of 650 people, only 5 boats were on the water. Everyone else was at the Russian Orthodox Church. A man in his early 30s, Misha Charles, had died. Saturday was his funeral.
My son-in-law was planning to go out fishing, but since we were close to Misha, that was my son-in-law's, one of his friends, he didn't go out fishing.
Mary Alice Tinker lives in Kasiglik with 3 of her children. Since her husband's death a year and a half ago, her son-in-law has become her family's subsistence provider. The day of Misha's funeral, he was at the service, and Mary Alice had awakened to another tragedy.
I found out the bad news just before 6 a.m. in the morning.
Her 23-year-old daughter, Cassandra Tinker, had been killed just hours before in a hit-and-run car accident while crossing a street in Anchorage. Cassandra had planned to return to Kasiglik a few days earlier to help with subsistence fishing, but had missed her flight.
She was so excited to come home and be with family, spend time with us. And she was excited to come home and eat fresh chips.
Cassandra had moved to Anchorage to work as a certified nursing assistant at the Alaska Native Medical Center. She was living with family in the city, working her first professional job, and saving money to rent her own apartment. Mary Alice says she is so proud of her daughter.
And you know what she said to me? I can't believe I'm adulting. She was happy about herself.
Cassandra's body arrived in Kasiglik on Wednesday, and Anchorage police are continuing to search for the driver of the blue Chevy pickup who struck her and fled the scene. This was the 4th death of a young person in the small community since April. It has been a tradition in Yupik communities to provide for a family that has lost someone and allow a full year to grieve free of subsistence activities. But when a series of deaths occur, the entire village can become strained. Families have been shortening their mourning periods, and this year in Kasiglik, the entire community is behind on fishing. Mary Alice says her family caught a few salmon early in the season and will resume their subsistence later in the summer. There will be silver salmon still in the water, and she hopes to get enough fish to cut plenty of fresh strips, Cassandra's favorite. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
A recovery crew is back in the Chugach Mountains this month, searching through the wreckage of a military plane crash. In 1952, an Air Force plane collided with the side of a mountain north of Anchorage. All 52 service members aboard perished. It wasn't until 2012 that the remains were rediscovered on the Colony Glacier. As Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell reports, a crew has assembled every June since then to bring closure to the families of the service members who lost their lives.
A Black Hawk helicopter lifts off from Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. It tilts towards the Chugach Mountains, flying low over forests and farmlands, alongside rocky peaks and sylvie valleys. A half hour later, Colony Glacier comes into sight. The Black Hawk lands on a flat patch of ice, and Captain Victoria Martinez ducks under its roaring rotors. She straps spiky crampons onto her boots.
You're geared up with a nice hat and
yes.
Neck warmer and gloves and everything.
Yep, I am. I got my balaclava, and probably I have 4 layers on.
Martinez is from the Air Force Mortuary Affairs, an operation responsible for the return of fallen service members. Out here on Colony Glacier, she's leading the effort to recover remains and personal effects left after the crash.
We get on our hands and knees. We have a trowel, and we are flipping over all of these rocks. We're looking for the smallest pieces of tissue or bone. So this is what we do every day for a month. 6 days a week.
And it's what they've done every June for the past 5 years. It's still cold out here, but this is the safest time to work. In May, there's still a chance of snow, and by July, Martinez says it's warm enough that the ice can crack and shift. Right now, that powder blue ice is covered in a thin layer of gravel, little pebbles, larger rocks. A few of those rocks are painted orange, telling the crew which areas to search. Here. Martinez walks carefully around debris.
This is a piece of a shirt, like a Blues uniform. You can kind of see the collar where the button would go.
And this stuff was all just lying here?
It's all just lying here, yeah. You walk out on the glacier and it's all just on the surface.
That despite decades of winter weather and summer melt. Martinez's team has found playing cards, nail clippers, a pack of cigarettes. You can still see the camel on the side. There's a camera completely intact and a light bulb that's gone unbroken for more than 60 years. These were things service members packed away in their luggage or tucked into their shirt pockets to keep safe. Clay Allen is an Army medic and remembers finding something that stuck with the whole crew.
You kind of look down, you're like, oh, that kind of stands out. Pick it up, look at it. Turned out it was a wedding ring, and it was kind of a pretty amazing find. You know, thinking about how big this area is and find something so small.
The crew found 2 more wedding rings just this month. If they can be identified, the rings will be returned to the service members' families. As for any human remains, those will be flown to Dover Air Force Base in Delaware.
Their loved ones died in service to this great nation. It's the least we can do.
Colonel Don Lancaster is commander of the Air Force Mortuary Affairs. She says 38 of the 52 people on board have been ID'd so far.
I would love to know someday that we're going to be able to identify all 52 members. Is it possible? Yes. But I know it may not happen. But if I can get 50, that's 50 families I've taken care of, and they know they have some form of closure and know that we kept our promise to them.
Keeping that promise means an escort, a dignified arrival, and burial with full honors. Captain Victoria Martinez has personally escorted the remains of 2 service members that went down in this crash. It's an emotional experience for everyone, she says.
They relive those moments again 60 plus years later, and so they're grieving, but at the same time, we're giving them closure.
So Martinez and her crew will keep searching, sifting through ice and gravel on this hallowed ground in the hopes of bringing more of these men home. On Colony Glacier, I'm Emily Russell.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
Want a fulfilling volunteer opportunity educating and protecting your community? As a trained Medicare volunteer, you'll help stop fraud and connect people with the benefits they've earned. You can make a powerful difference for Alaska's seniors. Learn more at medicare.alaska.gov or call Alaska's Medicare Information Office at 800-478-6065. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugach,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, speed dating gone fishy. Bristol Bay's commercial salmon season has begun. For the past several weeks, the boatyards have been filled with skippers and crew readying their vessels to hit the water, and the Bristol Bay Fish Expo in Naknek is playing matchmaker. KDLG's Avery Lill reports on how the expo is drawing from models like speed dating and Tinder to find the perfect fits.
Yeah, the crew switch, slide on down one spot to the right.
Men and women move seats at a long row of folding tables. Their goal? To convince the captains on the other side that they are the one.
And if you really want to be proactive and get hired, maybe you'll bring the skippers some coffee and donuts while they sit here, okay?
Meet skippers Ante Vukic and Bob Bonanno. Both had crew members back out at the last minute. Both have in mind what they're looking for in a match.
Safety and will to learn. Drug-free and alcohol more or less free, because that's the biggest killer of the fishermen.
Someone that's not shy, that appears physically fit, and just has a passion, and doesn't look to be prone to drama. I don't like drama on the boat.
The lanky youth across the table from Bonanno looks at the skipper earnestly. He tells the man that he already knows his knots and hitches. He tells me he's been in Naknek for days, without a lot of success.
My name's Adam Henry. Tell you the truth, I haven't really got a job yet. Thing is, before I flew down, I came from Tennessee. I saw some stuff on Facebook about the Fish Expo, so I had that in my mind. But I came down here early, walked the docks, and that didn't work out so good. But I'm hoping I'm going to find my home for some time being here.
Henry's story of walking the docks is pretty typical. That's why speed hiring has been a highlight event at the Bristol Bay Expo for 2 years. Katie Copps Wilson is an expo organizer.
Actually, it came from Tinder, the dating website, and we were thinking about all the captains, the crew that came up. There's a lot of crew that are beating the docks looking for a boat, and there's a lot of skippers out there looking for crew members, and it just seems like there was a lot of work going into those two things. So last year we came up with the idea of speed dating, well, which we term speed hiring, in order to connect captains and crew.
When the expo debuted speed hiring last year, the organizers tried to make it competitive.
Last year we tried to do it like Tinder. I thought it would be fun if we did like Tinder and we had X's and check mark signs for people to hang out, but it's not the culture, and it didn't work out. And so that was okay. We just need to figure out how it's going to continue to grow.
Even if last year's participants didn't get into the game, they still made lasting connections.
Dave and Janice Harsala hired last year off of speed hiring, and they hired a local kid here in Naknek, and they were very happy with it, and it worked out really well for them, and he's now going back on their boat this year.
This year, organizers settled on a structure more similar to old-time speed dating than Tinder. Captains and crew don't have to make a split-second decision about whether or not they click.
So I just think it's really cool because it gives everybody an opportunity to visit and move on and kind of give idea for the people. And it keeps people moving along so they can kind of see what's out there. Because if you just gave them one room, then people like captains, they'll cork everybody off.
For the landlubbers listening, corking off is slang for putting out a net just outside somebody else's net and intercepting their fish.
All right, that's your time.
So did this year's captains find what they were looking for? Did they fill the hole in their crew? Here's what Vukic and Bonanno had to say.
Well, I met quite a few interesting people, younger people that they wanted to give it a chance. And I was pretty happy for what I heard this morning. And I am planning to call this guy back and have a little longer interview with him.
I have two very good prospects. So I'm gonna work on that a little bit, go through my notes, and give one of them a call here shortly.
Sounds like more matches made in Bristol Bay. For AK, I'm Avery Lill.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Nikolai Alokli in Kodiak. Alokli was a fisherman in his youth and has lived in the Old Harbor Cannery area.
I'm 82 years old. Yeah, I'm the only child. And my mom died when I was 5. And I never really got to know her. My dad died when I was 14. I've been on my own since I was 14. I grew up all by myself. I think I did pretty good. Here I am. All my friends are from Old Harbor. They all speak Aleutic. That's how I kept my language strong. Grandpa was a reader in church Russian. He used to read the gospel in Russian in the church, and he read the gospel in Aleutic. I understood every word of it, but he was teaching me to speak Russian, but he passed away before I learned. I lost my oldest boy. He just passed away. I can't remember, 10, 15 years ago. He was only 43 years old. I started him fishing when he was 5 years old. Oh, he loved his fishing. And he went out, he joined the Navy. After the Navy, he came home and looked for crab shop. And he got in a boat and he crab fished for 18 years and came home and died. He was only 43 years old. He accomplished so much in his short life. I was really proud of him.
Nikolai Alokli lives in Kodiak. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Avery Lill, Daisha Eaton, and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media, and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rasha McChesney and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, and Emily Russell in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is David Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
If you're looking for business opportunities in the government marketplace, you'll want to know about the Alaska Procurement Technical Assistance Center. Alaska PTAC helps businesses navigate the challenging process of the federal, state, and local government procurement cycles with offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks and delivers services statewide. More information at ptacalaska.org. This message sponsored by Alaska PTAC.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.